how will central bank digital currencies be rolled out in the United States? Well, look no further than Sam Bankman-Fried for some troubling insights into how all of this is coming together. Investigative journalist Whitney Webb has uncovered some startling connections between FTX's Sam Bankman-Fried and the future of digital currencies in the United States, or central bank digital currency. So how does all of this come together? Whitney Webb joins us now, and she's penned a really interesting investigative piece on these connections. Whitney, thanks for joining us here on the show. Great to see you.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
So let's talk about this connection. First, people sitting there scratching their heads saying, wait a minute, this corrupt Sam Bankman-Fried, this fraudster who is like living in the Bahamas, like, how in the world is he tied to the central bank digital currency infrastructure? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of questions about money laundering and the Democrats, you know, funneling money through Sam Bankman-Fried and into Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of weirdness here that I don't think we got answers to, but it seems like you did. Can you break this down for us?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways to approach the central issue here, which is, you know, what the digital dollar is going to look like, and then how does Sam Bankman-Fried tie in? So as far as the FTX scandal goes, there's like one aspect that I in particular found very mysterious, and I'd covered, I think, in December 2022, and then I have my most recent article about the same entity coming out a few weeks ago. And it's about this, it's focused on this bank in rural Washington that was a very small building, a one branch community bank, that its entire history, which is over 100 years old, has never managed more than $10 million in customer deposits. And then the chairman of Deltek, the Bahamian bank tied very deeply to FTX, the chairman of Deltek takes over this small bank. And then begins transforming it into a new entity. It was previously called Farmington State Bank, and he turned it into Moonstone Bank. And shortly before the Moonstone name change, just literal days, Alameda Research, which is part of the FTX web of companies, and a big part of the resulting scandal of FTX, poured about $11.5 million, which is like more than half the net worth of the bank at the time, into this bank. And then its customer deposits in a very short amount of time after that ballooned to, I think, around $84 million, up from like, you know, under $10 million in deposits, all of which was associated with four accounts. And one of those four accounts was named FTX Digital Markets and was tied directly to Sam Bankman-Fried and totaled about $50 million. So you have this very small bank that gets taken over by this guy that's running this Bahamian bank, Deltek, that managed many, many accounts for FTX in the Bahamas. And then they take over this rural bank that has a clean slate, but is very small, and FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried pump a bunch of money into it. And in the course of this, they get approval to join the Federal Reserve System, which they should not have been able to do because of the for-profit foreign interests that had taken control of this bank. And to this day, the Federal Reserve refuses to comment on the approval process of allowing Farmington Moonstone to become part of the Federal Reserve System. And eventually, when FTX collapsed, this bank was subject to an insane amount of scrutiny, not just from independent media, but from mainstream media and even from Congress. So obviously, something was very wrong with the designs that SBF and Deltek's leadership had for this particular bank. But shortly before then, before the collapse of FTX, Moonstone had teamed up with a company called Fluent Finance, which is essentially the focus or one of the main, you know, focal points of this article. And Fluent Finance has three co-founders, one of whom claims to be the inventor of central bank digital currencies. And one of the other co-founders worked with him on the initial CBDC project in the Caribbean. And then the third one is a man named Bradley Allgood, who is a former NATO guy that after his career in the U.S. military and then NATO transitions into creating special economic zones for the cryptocurrency industry, and then teams up with top executives at Citigroup And apparently Barclays and HSBC, along with these inventors of the CBDC, to create this new company, Fluent Finance, which is trying to create a digital dollar token, like a stable coin, essentially, that is was going to be affiliated rather extensively, based on the press releases at the time, with this Moonstone Bank. And shortly before all of this happens as well, or as this partnership is actually cemented, right before FTX collapses, Sam Bankman-Fried says that FTX is about to announce major news regarding FTX aligning itself with a particular stablecoin. And as I note in the piece, based on how they plan to launch the digital dollar in the United States, this seemed to have been SBF and FTX's efforts to create a digital dollar. And I think it's very likely that a lot of the political donations SBF was making was to get, when regulation comes around, to have them favor this digital dollar that he was, helping to build through Moonstone.
So that's what I was going to ask. Was this, like a legitimate, it's almost like in Breaking Bad when Heisenberg opens a car wash, it's a front, really, for legitimacy, I guess, or the way that the mafia mm-hmm. would open a front for legitimacy. That behind the scenes, you're running, of course, this corruption and this massive scandal, so that in the eyes of the politicians who you're aligning yourself with in getting all of these Democratic donations, and you're making these partnerships, that you that you're protected, you're shielded. Does that appear to be what he was doing here?
Yeah, I think to a significant degree, but it's not just SBF. He's teamed up here with the chairman of Dell Tech, a man named Sean Chalopin, who has a rather interesting career trajectory as well. And Dell Tech, the bank itself, has a rather shady history and interconnections with the Rockefeller family and U.S. intelligence going back to its inception in the mid-20th century. Chalopin, of course, Jean Chalopin, the current chairman, who's involved with Moonstone, ended up taking it over at a later date, I think sometime in the 1990s or late 80s. He is very much present here with SBF. So it's something they were doing together. And this is where it's important to point out that Dell Tech and FTX had a lot of connections with Tether, which is the biggest US dollar peg stablecoin. And it's interesting that they, in creating this, in utilizing Farmington State Bank as this apparent front, were moving away from $1 peg stablecoin Tether to this other one produced by Fluent Finance, which was positioning itself as a version of Tether that was more trustworthy, quote unquote, and more likely to make it past the requirements to be put forth by, coming regulation of the crypto industry.
Can you also
seemed like an effort to position themselves for that, post-regulatory environment.
You also talk extensively about the UAE and these overseas connections. Can you talk about that? What is the UAE connection here to all of this, the United Arab Emirates?
Yeah. So Fluent Finance was created for a particular purpose and dissuaded from fulfilling that purpose by the collapse of FTX and the scrutiny applied to Moonstone. And so in the aftermath of all of that, they ended up essentially rebranding to an extent and establishing themselves in the United Arab Emirates, where they teamed up with this other company called R3, which is currently producing the CBDC for the United Arab Emirates. But the UAE right now is trying to position itself as a Silicon Valley for the future of finance, essentially. And they're doing this with this nexus of companies that includes R3, Fluent Finance, the XDC network, and some other entities. And R3 is important to pay attention to here because they, for example, were named by the publication Central Banking as CBDC Partner of the Year. They've been building CBDCs all over the world, but they're also not just building CBDCs, they're building bank-issued stable coins, deposit tokens, all of the infrastructure for these things. And these are terms that maybe a lot of people don't know about. I mean, I'm sure a lot more people are familiar with CBDC than these other terms, but the idea is overall, different classes of programmable, surveillable money that don't necessarily have to be issued by the central bank in the case of like a direct issued CBDC. You can have private banks issue money that's also programmable. and surveillable in the form of a stable coin or in the form of tokenized deposits or deposit tokens. And there's a big push, particularly from Wall Street, to have that happen. So essentially you have Fluent Finance now in the United Arab Emirates building the infrastructure for these deposit tokens and in these stable coins in such a way that they're compatible and interoperable with CBDCs in the UAE and beyond. And so the goal here, as I see it, and as is outlined elsewhere in this piece, is to have the UAE sort of serve as a bridge between the BRICS block model or BIS model of CBDCs, which is a direct issue CBDC, where like the central bank itself is issuing the CBDC, with this model that's likely to be followed in the US, potentially the UK and elsewhere in the West, where it's not a CBDC in name, but it is in practice, something called sometimes a synthetic CBDC, which is essentially a stable coin, but its reserves are backed with the central bank of that country, or there's some sort of interbank settlement network like FedNow, where, you know, there might be some sort of CBDC, but it's not interacting with the public, the end user, really at all. And so Fluent Finance, R3, all of these guys are setting the UAE up to be where this model likely to be followed in the West and this model likely to be followed in the BRICS block, among other countries, meet in the middle.
We've been saying here on the show, I think we sort of feel like CBDCs are an inevitability in the United States. Mm-hmm. The central bank digital currency is an inevitability, that the Fed can print money however it wants. $34 trillion in debt is the United States right now.
Yeah.
The Federal Reserve can now take control in a way that we currently don't have that ability to do with cash. In the United States with the U.S. Treasury. I think for a lot of Americans, you know, they're being told that this is great because cash is so expensive, right? The cost of cash is so expensive. It's more of an inclusionary type of currency, right? It brings together everybody, yeah. The poor, the rich, everyone is brought together under this CBDC.
Banking the unbanked also.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a bank, now mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about it because you will have a Fed bank. You know, we will be able to provide you with your own digital number
right.
and you'll be taken care of. And this is more inclusionary. Can you talk about that propaganda part of it?
Yeah, sure. Well, that's definitely the propaganda being put forth by proponents of a direct issued CBDC in the United States, but it's unlikely that the Federal Reserve is actually going to do that. If you listen to the statements recently made by people, top officials at the Fed, who have essentially said that they're not sure they're going to do the direct issued CBDC. And you even have, I think, Neil Kashkari talking about how direct issued CBDCs threaten freedom and all of this stuff. That's certainly true. But what the Federal Reserve is attempting to do in terms of the production and launch of a digital dollar isn't necessarily any better than a direct issued CBDC would be. And essentially, there's a couple of reasons for why this is. So essentially, as I explained in the article, what's going on here is that the goal is to not have the Federal Reserve and Jerome Powell program and surveil your financial transactions. It's to have Wall Street do that with, you know, support from the Federal Reserve. And this makes sense when you realize that the Federal Reserve system in the United States is owned by the private commercial banks owned by Wall Street. So obviously Wall Street doesn't want to be have their role in the financial ecosystem of the future, you know, be eliminated or be drastically reduced, right? Because if everyone has retail accounts at the Federal Reserve, as would be the case in a direct issued CBDC, that sort of takes a lot of what Wall Street does out of play. And also direct issue CBDC, the idea is that for every, you know, in this case, if it's a direct issued CBDC version of the dollar, you know, for every dollar, digital dollar issued, there'd be something in reserve, a one-to-one ratio, right? But that is very complicated for Wall Street because Wall Street and commercial banks in the United States and also elsewhere, you know, follow the fractional reserve model where they don't have one-to-one reserves. You know, if you deposit money in any bank really in the United States, it's like a 10-to-1 ratio in terms of what they keep. They only keep like a fraction of what you actually deposit at the bank, and the rest of it they loan out to somebody else and call that private capital creation. Right. And so if you follow this one-to-one model and the Fed starts acting as a retail bank. Wall Street loses what they can do with the fractional reserve model, which is a huge amount of what they do and offer today. I mean, in some senses, it might actually be better in the idea that, you know, a lot of bank runs and bank insolvency is, in the past, has been caused by the fractional reserve model. But Wall Street and the commercial banks, in my opinion, have no intention of letting that kind of system go, because a lot of their, you know, casinos, for lack of a better word, depend on that, you know. So
Wall unlike Street the Chinese the Fed, model,
obviously.
So unlike the Chinese model, which would be a direct issued central bank digital currency, or as the BRICS nations are looking to do here, it would be in the United States, it would be a Wall Street issued central bank digital currency, essentially.
Yeah. So, you know, instead of Jerome Powell programming and surveilling your digital currency, it will be Jamie Dimon doing it.
That feels so much better.
Which I think is why. Well,
yeah.
I think what they will try to do in selling this is be like, oh, look, the U.S. is standing up for freedom. The Federal Reserve wants to preserve liberty in the United States, and they're saying no to a CBDC. But having, you know, J.P. Morgan or Bank of America or any of these guys issue stable, you know, digital dollars, stable coins, or, you know, tokenized deposits is not going to be any better, because that's just as programmable and surveillable. And if you talk about someone like Jamie Dimon, I mean, he recently talked about how it would be a good thing to seize Americans' private property to solve climate change. That's not the kind of guy you want programming and surveilling your
Did he write those thoughts while he was on Epstein Island, you know, sitting there in his laptop? I mean, this is the guy, these are the guys that are going to control our central bank digital currency. I mean, do you think we're close to this rollout? I mean, the Fed has been teasing, you know, the Fed Now portion of this for a while. They've kind of been talking backwards, as you mentioned, Neil Kashkari, well, kind of. How soon will we see an actual central bank digital currency in the United States where Americans will have it on their phone and cash will sort of become a thing of the past?
Yeah, so I think it's coming soon for sure. I think FedNow, which has already been launched, is a key part of the infrastructure they need in order to take this next step. FedNow had to come first, just because of, you know, in order to update interbank settlement, you know, for this new paradigm, because one of the main selling points of digital currency, including CBDCs, is that it's, you know, it's so fast and instantaneous and all of that. So they have to deliver on that and have to try and sell it as more convenient. But I think there's a lot of other things in play in the case of the United States as well, because as you mentioned earlier, you know, having passed, you know, $34 trillion in debt, and with a lot of, you know, the dollar ecosystem depending heavily on like securitized debt and treasuries and all of this stuff, if the U.S. is to ever default on its debt or get close to defaulting on its debt or becomes unable to service its debt, which is becoming increasingly likely and I think some would argue inevitable, there's going to have to be a major restructuring of the dollar. And I think it's quite obvious that they would do that through the creation of a digital dollar. And one of the ways that I think it's pretty clear that they're going to go this route is because if they were to do a CBDC, the Fed would need to have already started a pilot, already started testing and development, and they haven't done that. And that would take several years, leaving them unable to time this launch with like the coming, you know, debt implosion. And so they want to use the digital dollars that are already here. And there's a litany of dollar peg stable coins. There's Tether and USDC, for example. There's this one that Fluent Finance has created called US Plus. PayPal has launched a dollar peg stable coin. They are all competing to be this new digital dollar, and I'm sure, you know, the Wall Street banks will have their own versions, whether it's tokenized deposits or they'll have a bank issued stablecoin. R3, for example, just teamed up with Wells Fargo to produce a digital dollar project that's currently being used by them. So this is definitely, in terms of the piloting phase, quite far, just as far as, you know, China is with their direct issued CBDC. So the idea is to use these dollar peg stable coins or deposit tokens, which are essentially already here. But I think what we're seeing competition over is which of those stable coins or are going to be, you know, chosen by regulators or Congress, who are going to be acting as kingmakers here to decide who makes the regulatory cut and who does not. And as I mentioned earlier, it seemed that Tether was not going to make the cut, hence prompting, the chairman of Deltek and SBF to team up with this other company. But Tether recently has onboarded the FBI and the Secret Service to its platform, has frozen wallets on behalf of the US government, and has publicly announced their intention to become a world-class partner to the US to expand dollar hegemony around the world. So they're obviously bending over backwards to try and make it through this regulatory cut. And so I think it's likely we're gonna see a lot of competition and also a lot of donations made to lawmakers who will be deciding which stable coins are going to be able to be used as digital dollars in this post-regulatory environment. And again, I think SBF was definitely angling to do that with a lot of his political donations, which again were mainly made to Democratic politicians. But keep in mind that one of FTX's other top executives, Ryan Salome, was making massive, massive donations to the Republicans. So they were funding both sides. And it's very likely that, you know, this is people that are invested in these other dollar stablecoin projects are doing much of the same right now. You know, SBF and FTX may be out of the picture in Moonstone as well, but Fluent Finance is not. They've teamed up elsewhere to further this goal. And then you have PayPal, Circle, Tether, you know, these other entities with their own suspect connections that are attempting to become the digital dollar of choice. And Wall Street, of course, will be having their own equivalents invariably. So it may seem like a lot of competing stable coins, but ultimately, they'll be very tied up with the U.S. government and also U.S. intelligence, because there's a broader push to merge a lot of data sharing between Wall Street banking regulators and intelligence agencies. That's been promoted really heavily by groups like the Carnegie Endowment since 2021 or so. And at the time, the Carnegie Endowment was run by Bill Burns, who is now CIA director. And there's a big push for that, currently. And we actually saw this, for example, with January 6th, where Bank of America was willingly sending U.S. intelligence agencies and the FBI and these groups, you know, information on the finances of people who were at the Capitol that day. So this is already happening, and they have an intention to, you know, deepen this any further. So do not think that this new paradigm is going to be any better for Americans and for privacy and for freedom than a CBDC would be. The goal is to have it, you know, framed as being private, but really it's the same, in terms of its authoritarian potential. It's the exact same as the Chinese model, but will be framed as different. And it's honestly, in my opinion, really little more than a PSYOP. And if you think about it, this has happened actually before in U.S. history. So after like 9/11, there was an effort to create this massive surveillance program of Americans that was completely unconstitutional, called Total Information Awareness, that was being run out of DARPA by a person a criminal from Iran-Contra, actually. And it got a lot of pushback from mainstream media. It was defunded by Congress over the uproar. So what they did is that the architects of this program teamed up with Peter Thiel and Alex Karp, and they turned the Total Information Awareness Program into a private company now known as Palantir. And Palantir now is a contractor for every single U.S. intelligence agency, of which there are now 18. Wow. So there was no uproar once it was framed as a private sector project.
And right. It is amazing
so
to think about.
Take the public out of it.
Yeah, you take the public out of it. And I think it's a really brilliant thing that you said, you know, $34 trillion in debt. How do you restructure the collapsing U.S. dollar? And you do it by putting it private, turning to the private sector, turning to Wall Street as a restructuring of the U.S. dollar. And if these are multinational organizations, you know, international arms as Chase Bank and Wells Fargo and Bank of America and all of these massive banks, then you have less panic. I guess you have less panic when the U.S. dollar is losing value up against BRICS nations around the world, because now you've made this transition. I've really never thought of it that way. It's a fascinating way to think of this transition of the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, you know, I think that's how they'll most likely get people to onboard onto the digital dollar and their equivalents as quickly as possible, is that if the existing dollar or cash is becoming, you know, rapidly devalued by hyperinflation, but the digital equivalent is not, for whatever reason, depending on how they structure it, then that will obviously be a major incentive for Americans to onboard onto the digital dollars in order to avoid the erosion of their wealth.
And which
And
is
I think
exactly
that's
what the
likely
Fed is. I
how.
mean, it seems like now it seems you're connecting the dots here in a big way. They are purposefully devaluing the US dollar, being they can't pay the interest payments on the debt, right? So they're purposefully devaluing the US dollar. Well, then what's the off ramp? Well, the off ramp is you go private, you go to Wall Street, and now here's this other solution. And so you should probably ditch the US dollar and move over to our digital version of this US dollar backed by Wall Street. I'm just having flashbacks of George W. Bush trying to privatize Social Security. You know, just like, you know, we've gone down some of these rabbit holes before. There's been enormous pushback in the public. I wonder how they'll get over that on the propaganda side, because you remember how furious Americans were. We're going to privatize Social Security. We're going to take it to Wall Street. We're going to allow you to invest your money in Wall Street under George W. Bush. And that got enormous pushback from the American public. So this is going to be an interesting propaganda machine that we're going to see unfolding, I think, in the next couple of months.
Yeah, I think they'll frame it as the only alternative to CBDCs, or a direct issue CBDC, and I don't think that's necessarily true. But I think they'll frame it that way. And then, you know, traditionally, what these entities do to pressure changes in human behavior is use a mix of fear and panic, usually around some type of event, to get people to, you know, quickly change their behavior and acquiesce to something they normally wouldn't submit to. And so, you know, whether it's what we talked about previously, some of, you know, this sort of cyber attack on the financial system, which a lot of these entities, the World Economic Forum and the Carnegie Endowment and these guys have been gaming out with the big banks and the big central banks for some time, you know, that's a possibility, or the erosion of value in the dollar itself. And, you know, there's any number of crises that they could milk to try and herd people into this new system. And of course, it's important to keep in mind too that all of this is going to be directly interfaced with the whole push for digital IDs, which is definitely speeding up. And even places like, you know, take for example, Florida. So you have people like Ron DeSantis in Florida who have framed themselves as being against like CBDCs and digital IDs. But in his case, you know, Florida's moving full steam ahead with digital driver's license and digital IDs. And even though he's publicly spoken against, you know, direct issued CBDCs, if he's okay for, you know, digital IDs, after all, it's very possible that he or a figure like him will try and get people to trust this money as being the antithesis to a CBDC. But rest assured, it is not, because even if it's not the US government directly issuing it, we know that these top Wall Street banks or whatever companies are chosen by the US government to be able to issue these digital dollars, they're going to be full on to collaborate with the surveillance agenda of the US, which is, you know, increasingly a financial surveillance agenda as well. And there's a lot of efforts to eliminate right now online and financial privacy for Americans. And we need to be very wary of that. And Wall Street has shown time and again that they're very willing to collaborate on those efforts. And obviously, you know, if they're going to be the ones programming and surveilling, they're going to be doing that in collaboration with the state. So it's going to be more like a public-private partnership for the digital dollar, and is definitely not an antithesis to the CBDC in terms of, you know, the threats it presents to human freedom and financial freedom.
So, like a Trojan horse. Well, you can read this entire piece. I
Yes.
encourage you to head over to Whitney's website called unlimitedhangout.com. Read the unmasking of Farmington Bank, FTX, the collusion for the coming US digital dollar. Whitney, always great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Thanks, my pleasure. Take care.
Thank you so much for watching this segment here at Redacted. We are live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, trying to share the stories that the mainstream media will not cover. You should also come over and join our community of Redacted Rebels over at redacted.inc. That's our private locals community where we can share exclusive content that we simply cannot share here on YouTube. Come over and join the rebellion together right now by going to redacted.inc. We'll see you next time.